From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because truth matters and life matters more. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man, we pick up where we ended on our previous broadcast and present more of an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank is talking with Frederica Matthews Green, author of Real Choices, Listening to Women, Looking for Alternatives to Abortion. Let's now join Hank and Frederica in their conversation.
Mexican-American women who are in labor, if they give birth in Mexico, their health outcome and the outcome for the baby is better than if they give birth in America. And the reason is they don't have the same support system. They don't have, in America, where we just, you know, smash families and separate everybody into a separate economic unit, they don't have the traditional forms of support from the women in the neighborhood and in your village and your mother and your aunt and everybody else is there to help you and encourage you and help you know how to do things. What do you do now that you've got this baby? That's something that people can have in a more committed society where people are really interconnected with each other. But in America, we all tend to get atomized and it's not available. It's merely medical, you know, it's merely institutional care that they get. And that's not the same as somebody who knows you and loves you, helping you to make decisions, helping you along the way.
I want you to talk about the structure of your book for a moment, because every other chapter is a listening chapter. You're listening to women in Washington, D.C., or Spokane, Washington, or wherever. You're listening to their stories. And you, I think, are trying to point out that post-abortion women have the responsibility to reach out and let other women know what, not just women, but men as well, what's on the other side of an abortion. There are dramatic consequences.
There really are. And I think about what the difference it would be if post-abortion women were given the spotlight from time to time and given a chance to talk about how it affected them in the long run. Not the ones who are being told to shout your abortion and to be proud of it and to, you know, to celebrate the fact that you had an abortion. We need to hear from the ones who found it heartbreaking. I remember one of the women in my book hated herself so much that for subsequent abortions, she said she wanted to go to the dirtiest clinic that she could find, and she refused to have any painkillers. And she just felt like she should suffer for the fact of what she'd done and was doing again by having a subsequent abortion. Boy, there's stories that need to be told. And so when I set up the book, I alternated with one chapter on something like adoption or welfare, and then the next chapter would be going to one of these cities and being in a group of post-abortion women, and I would just say, tell me your story. How did you come to make the decision to have an abortion? What led up to that? And they are such beautiful and such heartbreaking stories. Yeah, sometimes very encouraging. I remember the woman whose husband, driving to the abortion clinic, she said, I'm not sure this is right. And he said, do you think you're smarter than the Supreme Court? He was so harsh. She had the abortion. 2 weeks later, a friend told him about what an abortion procedure is, and he became vehemently pro-life, and then he was protesting outside. Like, right away, he's protesting outside the abortion clinic. Boy, there's some amazing stories in there. There's stories that need to be told. And, in fact, I was thinking the other day that a friend of mine who's a professor of the history of journalism said, it's those chapters that will continue to have value. He said, your chapters where you're doing statistics and analyzing and recommending policy and all that, that's so dated. And, of course, it's very dated today. But he said historians so seldom get to hear firsthand reports from people involved in something. What you hear is the chronicler writes down what the king said. You know, it's the important guy in the official recorder. But the unvarnished voices of women speaking for themselves, he said that's the thing that will have continuing value for people forever, and especially for historians trying to understand how this happened. So I think, Hank, I'm actually going to turn this into a smaller, slimmer book that I will call Real Voices. And I will just put in it these chapters where the women are speaking about their own experience. Perhaps does have more lasting, long-term value than my ideas of what we should be doing.
No, I think the whole book as it is fantastic, but I do think that this new idea for the book is also very, very worthwhile. What was it like for you? I mean, just as a woman, as an interviewer, as an intellectual, what was it like for you to get involved in listening to these stories? How did that impact your life?
Oh, boy. Of course, I didn't know what I was going to find. I had met women who'd had abortions and talked to them from time to time, just a few of them. And I couldn't imagine, for one thing, how will women act toward one another? Will they be shy and afraid to say very much? What about ones who were vehemently pro-choice before the abortion and those who were vehemently pro-life but couldn't bear that mom and dad would find out, so she had an abortion? I was a little bit nervous because I didn't know what to expect. But I came, this is the old days, with just a cassette tape recorder, and I would set it up and just get them, you know, the first one starts talking. And then it was very easy after that. I was glad to see that women did relax and share, perhaps in the way that women do when it's just women there, and did not seem to be intimidated by me or my recorder at all, thank God. I was so moved by what I heard. Sometimes I was angered at the way a woman had been treated. Sometimes I had tears come to my eyes when I heard a story. It was a deeply bonding sort of experience to relive those memories all together and to support each other. It was actually quite a beautiful experience, and I feel so blessed at all the things that I learned during that process.
Yeah, and this is a beautiful book, and I want to say to everyone listening in to this podcast, this book is available for those of you who stand shoulder to shoulder with us in the battle for life and truth, and in this case, we're talking about life in a sense of the foundation of civilization. The book is available on the web at equip.org. You can also write me at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. I am very fascinated by something you sent me. I had some of these quotes myself in various writings that I've done over the years, but you sent me something just before the podcast. And it goes back to when the church was young. And I think what's so striking in reading what you sent me, one page, I think that page is just so valuable. You go back to the Didache, something that might even be traced to a time before the fall of the temple in AD 70. The letter of Barnabas, Felix, Tertullian, St. John Chrysostom, St. Basil, all these great men who are part and parcel of the church talking about abortion in the early centuries. And they were talking about potions that kill a child. They were talking about the instruments that kill. I mean, this is powerful. So it underscores the fact that this problem that we're talking about in the 21st century was a problem the church was dealing with and dealing with adequately when the church was young.
That is so true. And it's surprising, isn't it? This was one of the reasons that women wanted to become Christians, was that the Christians do not kill newborn babies. They don't perform abortions. They welcome life. You know, the situation in the Roman Empire was ghastly, that the father was the supreme authority if a new baby was born, and he would go and he would look at it. And if he didn't want the baby, he would simply walk away. If he wanted the baby, he would pick it up, and that was the sign the baby was now part of the household. But, you know, maybe he already had a few daughters. This is another girl. He doesn't want it. So what would happen is the baby would be perhaps strangled, maybe smothered. In many cases, they would just put them outside. They would just, you know, go to a corner in the city and just deposit the crying baby there. And sometimes people would take the child home and raise it and love it. Sometimes they would take the child home and raise it and then use it for sexual trafficking or sell it as a slave. There are a lot of different motivations people have for taking hold of a baby that's lying there free. But of course, very often, no person got to the baby before dogs did. And the dogs or other animals would tear it apart. This was standard in the Roman Empire. And when women began to hear that Christians opposed that, it made them flock to the church because their hearts were broken by the babies they lost. And the idea that they respected the childbearing capacity of women and the babies themselves, that was all by itself. The fact that the church stood for sexual morality, for fidelity within marriage, those are the very things that drew women to the church. And as you say, these quotations, I think I've got about 8 of them right here from various early church documents. And I mean early, like from 70 or 80 AD, as you say, the same time the Gospels were being written, some of them. They're very straightforward.
Don't go away. In just a few moments, we'll rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Frederica Matthews Green. No one wants an abortion as she wants an ice cream cone or a Porsche. She wants an abortion as an animal caught in a trap wants to gnaw off its own leg. When Frederica Matthews Green's essay containing that line was published, pro-life leaders began quoting it. But it started showing up in pro-choice publications too. It seems that the two sides agree on one thing. Abortion is a miserable choice. Be sure to read Real Choices, Listening to Women, Looking for Alternatives to Abortion by Frederica Matthews Green. Call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. A deeper understanding of the Bible's principles and truths will improve the spiritual, moral, and ethical problems facing our nation. Yet the obstacle isn't that the Bible doesn't speak to our greatest needs or answer our deepest questions. It's that the average person lacks the time and tools to extract the answers. That's why Hank Hanegraaff wrote the complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition, revised and updated. This expanded edition addresses over 210 of the top questions he's received as host of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Hank has taken the complex and made it simple and memorable. Receive the revised and updated complete Bible Answer Book as our thank you for your gift by calling 888-7000-CRI. And make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. That's equip.org. Bertrand Russell famously said, "Most people would rather die than think, and many of them do." Not so with CRI support team members. Support team members are not only serious thinkers, but their membership in CRI's support team helps to equip hundreds of thousands of fellow believers around the globe each and every month. Are you not a member? Then you're missing out. Not only do support team members form the backbone of Christian Research Institute's outreaches, but they enjoy their selection of resources from our Equipping Essentials library and receive a complimentary subscription to CRI's award-winning Christian Research Journal. Just two of the benefits of membership. To discover how you can make a difference 24/7 in equipping believers at home and abroad to stand for life and truth, check out the benefits of membership at equip.org. Dr. Eben Alexander's wildly popular near-death experience book, Proof of Heaven, assures us that no matter what we do in this life, only unconditional love and joy await us in the world to come. But our Lord warned that while the gate to hell is wide, the road to it broad, and those who enter through it are many, the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few. Your generous support lets Hank Hanegraaff and CRI speak out against the lies that lead to hell. In appreciation for your gift today, we'll rush you Hank's book, Afterlife, What You Need to Know About Heaven, the Hereafter, and Near-Death Experiences, filled with answers to your questions about life after death. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org now. Again, that's equip.org. Let's rejoin Bible Answer Man host Hank Hanegraaff and his guest, Frederica Matthews Green, in their conversation.
As you say, these quotations, I think I've got about 8 of them right here from various early church documents. And I mean early, like from 70 or 80 A.D., as you say, the same time the Gospels were being written, some of them. They're very straightforward. Now, what some people say is, oh, they said that because the mother might die. They weren't concerned about the baby at all. It was just whether the mother died. But no, if you read this, it's explicit. It's saying you will not kill a little one. This is not all right. You will not kill a child. So, as I said, that was one of the main things that attracted women to the church, was this opposition to exposure of infants, killing, infanticide, killing of newborns, and abortion, various forms of abortion before the birth.
You know, it's interesting, as you were talking, I was thinking back to an experience that I had. What triggered that in my mind was when you said they were flocking to the churches because of the position that the church had, the respect for life and so forth. I remember speaking in, or at least I was about to speak in a large mega church. I was sitting in the green room, and the pastor came in and asked me, Hank, what are you going to speak on this time? And I said, you know, I'm going to talk about the issue of abortion. I just developed an abortion acronym, and that was going to be the essence of my message. And he said, please, Hank, don't talk about that. And his reason for that was he didn't want to hurt the women who had had abortions. He said, so many of the women in the church have had abortions, and if you talk about abortion, it will hurt them. What's an appropriate response to that?
What you say really resonates with me. And I'm the wife of a pastor, so that's an aspect of it. When I used to be part of a group that met once a quarter, that was the leadership, the presidents and leaders of all the national pro-life organizations, and something that we would often talk about is, why don't the pastors support us? There are Christians out there that are pro-life, and if we could only reach them and bring them together, but the bottleneck is the pastor. He doesn't want to talk about it for exactly this reason. I'm afraid someone in the congregation will begin to cry. That was the vivid image in the heart and the minds of many of these pastors. They felt that it wasn't, as that pastor told you, that it wasn't right to hurt a woman in this way. I remember one of the pro-life leaders saying, maybe she needs to cry. You know, maybe that will be the beginning of her healing. And that's very true. And thank God there are so many resources and organizations for post-abortion women, just about any pregnancy care center you can go to. There will be women there who have had abortion, who understand what you went through, and who are trained, who know how to help you get past the tears and assimilate the truth of what has happened, accept it, and know that God is caring for that child and keeping that child until you join that child, when you return to the presence of God. There's much good news and much comfort to be had. It's very important that women bear their responsibility. They did find that if they took the tack of blaming the man or blaming society or something, the women didn't actually get healed. That accepting what you did and recognizing what it really was is an important key to healing.
Beautifully said. Yeah, I want to close this podcast with some rapid-fire questions. I sort of have you respond to claims from both sides, the pro-life and the pro-choice side. The first statement that's made is women and women alone have the right to decide what to do with their bodies. How would you respond to that?
Yes, the woman alone has the right to decide. So I would grant a woman the right to decide about her own body, but not somebody else's body, which is what the unborn child is. The unborn child in the woman's womb has the right to keep her arms and legs connected to her body. She has the right to remain intact, to remain alive. So, yeah, it's not only your body we're talking about.
Wow. Well said. Access to legal, professionally performed abortions reduces maternal injury and reduces death that would be caused by an unsafe, illegal abortion.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you know, the coat hanger.
Right, the coat hanger image. when they asked in Louisiana, this was decades ago, but they were considering a restrictive abortion law, and they said, they asked, if you got pregnant, would you have an illegal abortion? And 98% of the respondents said, heck no, those are dangerous. You know, if it's one thing that pro-life and pro-choice agree on, it's that illegal abortion is dangerous, so you shouldn't do it. Both sides have emphasized this message. Pro-lifers are just as opposed to illegal abortion as they are to legal abortion. So I feel like, you know, this is one thing that both sides agree on. So let's get together and keep saying how bad illegal abortion is. We can totally agree on that. But there is one more thing about that. Coincidentally, right about the time that abortion became legal, they invented this vacuum suction device. And it is used not only for abortions, but it's done in cases where the interior of the uterus just needs to be vacuumed out. For example, if there's a miscarriage, but the child has not come out of the body, so they might go in with this vacuum device. And an extremely pro-life doctor said, it is so much better from what compared to what I had before, which was basically using a scalpel, using a knife and going in and trying to cut everything. Of course, you could injure the womb. Now that these suction devices, which are so safe, they exist everywhere, it seems likely that if illegal abortion continues, it will be by the use of these machines, which are not going to be destroyed, which still have legitimate uses. So the specter of the coat hanger is no longer an accurate one. These vacuum suction machines are going to be there, so it's not going to be that dangerous if there is illegal abortion. But, of course, we pro-lifers vehemently oppose illegal abortion.
Why should someone who doesn't believe in God, who doesn't have any religious belief, be forced to adhere to a moral argument that is against abortion and just doesn't apply to their personal beliefs?
You know, people almost never use religious arguments to oppose abortion. It's not a religious issue. It's a human rights issue. And the child has the right to remain alive just as much as a tortured prisoner has the right to be freed, just as much as anyone who's injured at work has the right to good medical care so they don't get infected and get sicker and sicker. So all of these reasons are secular reasons why abortion is wrong. It's an act of violence. That's the main thing. You don't have to believe in God to know that that's wrong.
Mm. Abortion, though, Frederica, gives pregnant women the option to choose not to bring fetuses that might have profound abnormalities to full term.
Yes, yeah. You know, once again, there are couples who would love to adopt a child who has abnormalities, even if it wasn't going to live very long. They just have more love to spare. And they would love to give that to a child, even a dying child. So that's not a good excuse. But I remember, I want to give a little illustration of a friend of mine who was pregnant with twins. And they found out during the pregnancy that the child was extremely deformed, that her skull had not sealed, and the brains were separate from her head, hanging off the back of her head. She would not be able to survive. It was, you know, perhaps if she could breathe, maybe for a few hours, but death was inevitable. So they tried to get the woman to agree to have that baby aborted and let the other baby continue to live. And, of course, she disagreed. When the baby was born, the parents and the grandparents were called in, and they wrapped the baby in a blanket, and this little girl with a terrible, mortal situation that she could never survive, she was loved. She was wrapped in blankets and placed in her mother's arms, and she was kissed and passed from hand to hand, and the grandmother was singing lullabies from the old country, and this child had a beautiful death. And this child died knowing that it was loved. It wasn't cut to pieces. That's the difference.
Yeah, and you know, as you're talking about that, Frederica, I was thinking about my dad. He was dying of a fibrosis in the lungs, and so it encroached upon his ability to take in oxygen and slowly suffocating to death, and a very, very difficult death. And I remember asking my dad, while he was going through this process, wouldn't you just like to just die and go home and be with the Lord? And he looked at me and he said, Hank, every moment is precious. And what you just communicated, and by the way, you know, on his deathbed, before he died, he was able to pray a blessing over every one of his children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. We were able to assemble everybody there, and it was the quintessential example of what he was saying, every moment is precious. But you're now pointing out that this is true on both sides of the spectrum, at the end of life, but also in this case, as you so beautifully communicated, at the beginning of life.
Thank you for listening to the special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff and his guest, Frederica Matthews Green. To hear this Hank Unplugged podcast interview in its entirety, go to equip.org, iTunes, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. In appreciation for your vital gift to help strengthen and expand CRI's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches, Hank would like to send you a copy of Real Choices, Listening to Women, Looking for Alternatives to Abortion. Call a resource consultant at 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or visit our website, equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded by listeners like you. We're on the air because truth matters and life matters more. The complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition, revised and updated, is a comprehensive collection of the most often asked as well as most difficult questions Hank Hanegraaff has received in nearly three decades of hosting the Bible Answer Man broadcast. This expanded edition contains new entries, leading readers to a better understanding of God and our relationship to Him in Jesus Christ. The complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition, revised and updated, is a comprehensive, handy, and attractive volume that you will return to again and again. Take your exploration of God's Word to new heights and receive the revised and updated Complete Bible Answer Book as our thank you for your gift by calling 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org.